You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a former Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter. I have another podcast called Baseball by the Book, so please check that out. Most important for our purposes, though, I am a lifelong Orioles fan. Well, folks, this was a monumental week in Orioles history. We found out this week that Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter have both been let go by the club. I think a lot of us were expecting that Buck was going to be gone. The news that Duquette's not coming back was a bit of a surprise, especially given how things went during the trade deadline, and it seemed like Duquette was somebody who was planning to be here for a while. But anyway, that means that the Orioles' rebuild is now in rebuild mode, not just on the field, but in the front office and in the manager's seat as well. So the Orioles have some tough decisions to make over the next little while, and these are decisions that are going to affect the course of the club for the next several years, perhaps even the next several decades. To talk about that, our guest today is Matt Taylor. He returns to the podcast. You know him. He's from Roar from 34, an excellent Orioles blog. We'll get to that in just one second.
Hey, folks, just a reminder. For all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined again by Matt Taylor. You know Matt. He is with the Roar from 34 blog. Lots of great Orioles stuff there, so you should check that out. And he's been a guest several other times on the podcast. Matt, the big news out of Birdland this week, of course, is that Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette are both gone. Their tenures with the Orioles are over. Their contracts are not going to be renewed. And it's a new beginning for the Orioles in a sense. Their leadership in the front office and in the dugout is going to be different going forward. I think I think a lot of us expected Buck Showalter to be gone. I think there was a lot of talk that Dan Duquette would be back, though. So that one was a bit surprising to me. Let me just ask you first off, do you agree with both these decisions?
I'm okay with the decisions, and I think that probably where I'd come to peace with it, I guess you could say, even before the end of the season, was that, you know, it's fine to say it's a fresh start, we're going in a new direction, and to part ways in a somewhat amicable way of saying, you know, we've had a good run, we're going in a new direction. I mean, I think a lot of questions are out there. I think Buster Olney raised it on Twitter there about, you know, why make this decision now after having, you know, if you knew this was where you were going, why not do this earlier in the summer, especially as you're approaching the trade deadline and a major shift in personnel that you were going to have in terms of actual players and who you're getting in return. So that would be the biggest question for me is, you know, if we were going to do this and we knew this is where it was headed, then, you know, why not do it sooner so that as you're restructuring your, you know, the players that you're getting through these trades, that you have your new leadership in place. Now, with that said, I mean, it's pretty consistent with, I think, an Angelos ethos in the sense that, you know, Dan Duquette's, you know, wanted to leave to go to Toronto several years ago, and the issue was honoring your contract. So I guess they honored both guys' contracts through the end of the season and knew they were going to be leaving anyway. But it does raise questions about, you know, who was making decisions here at the end. And as we move forward, we're looking to have trust in, you know, in the organization that they have going to have a direction in mind. And that seems really muddled the way it kind of all went down.
Yeah, I mean, muddled is a good word for it. And I think that's, you know, unfortunately, for me, one of the red flags here is that, you know, we've been hearing for a while, you know, at least unofficially, that Duquette was coming back. He seemed to be acting like a guy who was coming back. You know, he seemed to be the guy who was in charge of all those trades in July. So it's logically, it seemed like, well, they're letting him take over and really be in charge this time, and we're going to see what he can do. And then to have this happen, it just feels like, I don't know, there's mixed messages maybe from the organization about what actually is going on. And I'm a little concerned about that because I feel like, you know, I don't think they have a good sense of who they want to be running this team. And I think that's still a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, I'd gone from a position earlier in the year where I thought, you know, Duquette's going to be gone, and in some ways was thinking that might be a good thing. But then, you know, with the way they handled it, I really started to think like, wow, he might be here. He might be the guy that sets the path. And he was certainly the face of it as they kind of announced, you know, we're turning more now to analytics and to an international scouting, and seemed to be taking ownership of that. And that's really, I mean, you've got a fan base that's going to be difficult to bring to the yard, you know, for the foreseeable future. And they were, you know, for much of this season, understandably so. And having people in place that, you know, the fans can trust and feel like, okay, we're headed somewhere, we trust in these people, is going to be important. And right now, that has become a really big question mark.
Yeah, and I think in the press release that the team used to announce these decisions, they indicated that the person replacing Dan Duquette would come from outside the organization. I think that was the words they used in the press release, which, you know, again, why that's interesting is because it indicates it's not going to be Brady Anderson, at least if they're being straightforward with that terminology, and it's not going to be a promotion from within of anybody else, which I guess is somewhat encouraging to me. I don't really think anybody who's been around making decisions in this team the last few years needs to be coming back. I think they need an entirely fresh start at this point. Somebody from another organization who's had success and, you know, maybe has been in an assistant GM role or something, and like you said, understands analytics, understands the international market, all the things the Orioles have been bad at in recent years. So, you know, that's encouraging in a sense, I guess. My fear, though, is that maybe that means it's just going to be some retread like, you know, Ned Colletti or somebody like that.
Yeah, and I mean the decisions that are made now, I guess, will be, you know, our indication publicly of where they're going with it. And is it just retreads, or does it actually reflect a new direction for the organization? And I think, you know, you raise Brady's role in all of this and where he's going to be, and that's another piece that there's still not clarity for him. It would seem that the statements, you know, again, like you said, if they're being genuine in them, that he's not going to be moving into this, you know, leadership role, but is he still going to be there? Is he still going to be lurking in the background? Which, you know, depending on what you believe from a lot of the coverage during the season and even in previous seasons, is that he had kind of this outsized, flexible role that allowed him to kind of touch on a lot of different pieces of the organization without necessarily being accountable for, you know, for all of those pieces, which is kind of, you know, nice for him, but also kind of messy for the organization. So is someone coming in going to have that issue to deal with right off the bat, or is there going to be some kind of role clarity for him? And you know, that term of kind of role clarity, I think, is important. It's been lacking for a long time within the Orioles, particularly at the front office level. I mean, you can go back several years and, you know, changing titles of what used to be a GM and takes on a new title, and then we've had multiple people serving in that role. So I think, you know, getting some role clarity and you know, some actual definition of who's in what role and what direction this team's headed is sorely needed at this point.
Right. And I think, yeah, it's role clarity. And then the person who they, you know, choose to succeed Dan Duquette needs to have, in my opinion, needs to have, you know, pretty much absolute authority over the baseball side of things, right? Like I said, you can't have Brady Anderson second guessing him. You can't have, you know, one of the Angeloses second guessing him and coming in and making decisions about Chris Davis behind the back of this person. You know, those sorts of things are what I think have really hurt this team. And you know, putting a person in charge and having that person ultimately be accountable and ultimately having decision making authority, it seems to be the way other organizations are run, and it seems to be the way they need to head.
Yeah, that seems to be the answer. It seems so simple, but it's been so difficult for the Orioles. And I mean, that's really the piece that that sets everything else in motion. And I think, you know, as you look at now having these two spots open, really getting that person, you know, replacing Duquette in that role and letting them be integral in that hire. You know, we got indications for much of the Showalter and Duquette tenure that there was this tension and power struggle, and yeah, there's going to be disagreements, sure, along the way, and manager may want some input on personnel decisions, but there still has to be, you know, I think more power behind the person that's actually making those personnel decisions. And so who you put in that role and giving them a chance to be part of, I think, the managerial hire is going to be important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It needs to go in that order. They need to hire a you know, GM or whatever they're going to call this position. And then that person needs to be the person making the managerial decision. And they can't do it backwards. They can't do it concurrently. because that just doesn't work. I mean, we know Buck was there before Duquette, and that may have been, you know, may have been the root of some of their disagreements. You know, it wasn't Dan Duquette's decision, not necessarily the guy he would have hired. And he also, Buck, you know, he's an old school guy. He's an old manager who's been around for a long, long time and isn't necessarily the kind of manager that a modern GM might want. You know what I mean? So that's a decision that I think you need to leave up to that person. And to me, if the Orioles do it that way, if they hire somebody from outside the organization who is analytically oriented, has good background in international scouting, and that person is allowed to make the managerial hire, if they do it like that, I'm going to have, you know, some sense of confidence that the organization finally gets it. If they screw it up and, again, hire a retread manager, hire a manager who is, you know, a former Oriole but has no other particular qualifications to be the manager, all those things are going to be huge red flags that this is the same old Angelos clan, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think this is a point at which, you know, the Angelos sons are really kind of defining themselves publicly, right? That there's this question of, okay, how are they different from their father? How are they the same? So if we see much of the same that we've seen in the past, I think that's going to be really disheartening for, you know, for a lot of people, fans in particular. It's a chance for them to actually put their stamp on it and say, we're going to do things a little differently now under kind of the new Angelos regime.
Right. And there's a blueprint for how to do this now. You know, I mean, you see how the Astros have done it. You see how the Cubs have done it. And you don't need to do things in the exact same way. But in both cases, you know, there was a guy put in charge who was really allowed to make decisions, and they were willing to live with a few years of losing to get to the point that they wanted to, you know, where they'd be winning again, all that sort of stuff. It's not rocket science, like you said. You know, I mean, they just have to make the decision that they're going to do it and that they're going to hire the right people.
Yeah, and I think within that too, like having that determined strategy, it also allows that it's not going to be perfect. I mean, when you look at the Astros and the success that they've had, they had misses in there as well, right? They had some number one draft picks that they wound up whiffing on in terms of how it turned out. But having that as part of an overall strategy, like those are easily forgotten about. So Mark Apple, was that the one that they drafted who won a bust for them? So it's like those things.
Brady Aiken was a bust as well.
Yes. Yep. That's the other one that I was thinking of. Thank you. I couldn't think of his name. So you've got those within it. But now, I mean, the Astros have won a World Series. Their model's been a success. So it's easier to forgive those. And so I figured that's part of it too. If you do have this blueprint and this is how we're doing things, that factors in that, yeah, not everything's going to pan out perfectly. But if we do have an overall plan that allows for, we're going to have some misses along the way, but we're still doing an organizational wide philosophy to approach this that is going to have more hits than misses.
Yeah, it's absolutely so true. I interviewed Ben Reiter recently. He wrote a book about the Astros. And that's one of the things he was emphasizing was that, yeah, this plan didn't go, you know, entirely the way they wanted it to go. They did have those big misses in free agent. In draft picks. They released J.D. Martinez, you know, who's turned out to be one of the best hitters in baseball now, and they just gave him up for nothing. And they made some other mistakes along the way. But overall, the plan worked because they were patient and they did the things they wanted to do, and they didn't worry about getting criticized in the media. They didn't worry about attendance so much. They did the things they thought were right and felt like those things were going to eventually lead to a good baseball team. And of course it did. Now, maybe it's not, you can't duplicate it exactly, but I think the general idea there that you've come up with a plan, you have one person in charge of that plan and you stick to it. That's really the model to me. And the specifics aren't necessarily as important as that just general idea.
Yeah, I agree. And I think too often that where there's not that model, you then wind up putting more stock in those individual stories. So you need a draft pick to pan out. And that's what you're marketing. I mean, during the dark ages when Matt Wieters was coming through the system, there was so much focus on him. And he was the savior. But it's like that's one piece, right? So when you're talking about individual pieces, and even as we look at that now in terms of, hiring a manager, who's going to be succeeding Buck, that Buck was very marketable. There was a lot that was done around him. He brought a lot of belief to the organization. But you can't just go for a flashy piece here or there. There does have to be some kind of overall philosophy behind that fits with it. And I think when you see more of those individual pieces that are highlighted, That's where you realize that, wow, it really is kind of hit or miss with this. You know, we need this star to pan out, and that's, you know, that's going to be our show of success, rather than an overall philosophy and strategy that you know, is going to have some of those stars as part of it, but also isn't going to be so reliant on just, you know, a player or a couple of players becoming superstars in order for it to work.
Now, like, speaking of Buck, what are your thoughts on in terms of replacing him as manager? I mean, we've seen some names thrown around that, you know, frankly are pretty uninspiring to me. You know, names like Mike Bordick and Billy Ripken, and, you know, guys who have some history with the Orioles, but no particular reason to think that they're interested in managing or that they'd be particularly good managers. And then I've seen the name of some retreads thrown out there too. You know, Mike Socha, Dusty Baker, and to me, again, that's like, I mean, Dusty Baker, it couldn't be a worse fit for where the Orioles are right now. I mean, he's a guy who thrives when he's got a veteran team. The players love him. He's the kind of guy who can come in. But I think it relies on players who are, you know, leaders and guys who've been around for a while. It's not going to work with a team that's young and going to lose 100 games. That's just not a good fit, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think that what you've hit on is really the key point here. Like, we get attracted to certain names and you know, a nice hire in that sense. But we really need to look at where your organization is and where they're going to be for, you know, at least the short term of the next few years. And as you speak to it, we're looking at a lot of young players, player development. And so guys that aren't as sexy of names that, you know, I would still be okay with. And again, looking probably more in a short-term capacity, but, you know, the Sun listed, you know, 10 different candidates. And on that they had, you know, both Ron Johnson at AAA Norfolk and Gary Kendall at AA Bowie. And those aren't going to get people excited, but you think these are guys that, you know, have reputations for working with young players and, you know, at this stage that the organization is at, that you know, that might be someone that you want in that role. And I'd at least be more comfortable with that in terms of someone like that has that managerial experience, that's worked with young players, see if they can translate that some at the major league level, rather than just, you know, bring in someone like a Mike Bordick who hasn't had that managerial role and may be very knowledgeable about the game, but doesn't have that experience behind it. So again, those things aren't going to inspire fans. They're not going to bring people to the gates, but, you know, I don't think that's how you should be looking at the managerial hire at this stage. It's more about who's going to help young players develop. And maybe what you have with the benefit of those guys too is that if they're coming in hired with a GM, certainly you know, anyone that's in a managerial role is going to have a big personality to some degree, but they're not coming in, you know, like a Dusty Baker, like a Mike Socha, where just managing a personality that big as a, you know, as a new GM, is going to be a challenge, and that they might want an outsized role versus someone that's, you know, really kind of understands their role. And hey, you're here to develop young players and to help, you know, us get these guys major league ready, much like what you've done. We now want you to translate that at the major league level.
Yeah. And of course, as we know, throughout baseball, in many, many organizations these days, the role of the manager has changed significantly than what it was even, you know, 5-10 years ago. And it's now seen as much more of an extension of the front office than as its own individual fiefdom, right? I mean, Buck was definitely an old school guy where he was, you know, he was the guy in charge. He wasn't taking marching orders necessarily from the front office. The new model seems to be more like, yeah, that guy is going to, you know, so a lot of the decisions are actually going to be made at the front office level, and the manager is going to, you know, not necessarily have the autonomy he did in the past. So again, it'll be interesting to see whoever they bring into that new GM role. If it is a more modern, forward-thinking kind of person, then I think that role of who the manager is, you're definitely not going to see a Dusty Baker or a Mike Socha or a Joe Girardi in that case. You're going to see somebody, again, maybe you've never heard of, or a former player who is doesn't have a ton of experience.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that if the focus were to excite fans just with the managerial hire, then I think we're already starting off in the wrong direction. You know, that's one of the many telling things we'll see from this. And when you look at, again, those kind of former Orioles names, that seems like a dark ages approach, right? Where we just bring in a name of a guy that people recognize, and that's going to please the fans in the short term, maybe bring them out of just curiosity, nostalgia, whatever, but really isn't a fix for the future.
Yeah, and of course, you know, all this may be irrelevant ultimately anyway, because as we've seen with so many of these rebuilding teams in recent years, the guy who suffers through, you know, the 100 lost seasons and the last place finishes oftentimes is not the guy who's there by the time the team is competitive again. So this next person may be a sacrificial lamb in some ways, right? It's going to be maybe a person who's just going to have to endure a lot of losing and not necessarily reap the benefits of it if things do turn around in a few years.
Yeah, and guys have to be aware of that. I mean, these guys are smart, and especially when you look at the big names that maybe have more attraction to them. Like, one, they're going to be looking at multiple opportunities, and they have to know walking in, like, this is not the best situation. This is not a short-term fix. Do I want to be in that situation? And the other side of that, I think it was a piece I was reading on The Athletic that was talking about, you know, managers of the year and how soon afterwards they wind up unemployed, you know, and with, you know, Paul Molitor being the most recent example of that. But you have tons of examples from Joe Girardi. You got Davey Johnson, you know, the very season that he gets it. So even those guys that win the awards as the top guy wind up, you know, being gone from the team shortly thereafter as well. So I would think of looking at this, that anyone's coming in has to be realistic to know that I may be the interim guy that leads them to success. And, you know, with my interest in Orioles history, one of the names that I've been thinking about a lot, both in terms of, you know, fitting in Buck into the overall, you know, historical narrative of the Orioles, but then also just kind of where things are. I've been thinking a lot about Paul Richards. It was a guy that, you know, started out when the Orioles had never won, you know, coming off moving to Baltimore in 54, and he comes in there in the late 50s and initially has a role that's, you know, combination GM and manager. And then Lee McPhail comes in that GM role. So he just becomes a manager and he takes the Orioles to their first ever winning season in Baltimore, wins 89 games, which at the time, and, you know, pre-division baseball, you know, takes him to second place, which nowadays would have been good for a wild card, but really built things up. But then, you know, wasn't in that role to see the success that came after with the Orioles. And you need guys like that. And I think sometimes they're forgotten too easily. But it's a really important role right now. And I hope that if they do get someone that's more in that role of building up for the next, you know, few years and getting to that next stage, that when it's all said and done, there's an appreciation for the role they're playing, because it's an important one.
All right, well, let's lead into the last question then, that you've already touched on this, but you're a guy who's very knowledgeable about Orioles history. We know Buck Showalter is ranked second in all-time wins as a manager for the Orioles, and I don't know where he ranks in other things, like games managed. He's probably second also in that. We know because of the disaster that this season was, he now has a below 500 record as Orioles manager, which is, it's just kind of misleading in a way, right? Because this season was just such an aberration and really just killed his record. Where do you think he ranks among Orioles all-time managers, if you had to rank him? I mean, we know Earl Weaver's number one. Where does he fall after that?
I'd probably put him somewhere in that range of the, you know, of a Hank Bauer or even a Paul Richards, and maybe kind of in between the two. Yeah, I think with the number of games per season that Bauer was winning, and then bringing the Orioles a World Series title, you still have to put him above it. But, you know, certainly up there, right near the top, maybe topping out at about, you know, maybe third place all time. And I think one of the things that's also important too is just the context of it. And I think that's the thing that may be lost easily in future years, is the context of, you know, you look at, you know, Buck having a losing record overall, and then having the baggage of this season, the worst season in team history. But you know, then you lose all the context of what he came into and what it meant to finally bring the organization back to its winning ways and turning things that had been a nightmare before into strengths. I mean, the bullpen, you know, and strengthening the bullpen made such a difference in bringing them back, especially in those 2012 to 2014 seasons. And, you know, if you think back not far before that, like I think it was the 2007 season where they spent like $40 million to upgrade the bullpen and ended up, you know, with a 30-3 loss and one of the worst bullpens in baseball. So, you had taken a franchise that was abysmal, that, you know, had tried to throw money at their bullpen problem and it just turned out worse, and then comes in and wins and makes the bullpen into one of their key assets that turns out to be a differentiator for them. So I think that context will be important, but I think, you know, in the overall grand scheme of where things fit, you've got Earl at the top and everyone else far behind, but I'd still probably put Buck behind Hank Bauer, but maybe, you know, somewhere in that range, right competing for that third spot.
Yeah, I mean, that seems fair. I mean, I do think, what you touched on there is very important, the context that we all know this, we lived through it, but future generations may not appreciate, you know, just how dismal things were for the Orioles before 2012. I mean, this was a team that had been losing for you know, what, 14 years at that point or whatever it was. There was no real hope. There was no real sense that they were going anywhere as a franchise. And then he suddenly has this great year where they make the playoffs, and then he brings them to a division title a couple years later, another playoff appearance a couple years after that, and generally keeps them competitive through most of his tenure. And compared to where they were before and compared to the obstacles he was dealing with a, you know, dysfunctional ownership group, I think you have to consider his tenure a success overall, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think even just when he first was hired, I think that that was something that, you know, got people's attention as a name that they trusted. And almost immediately, you know, even though 2011 wound up being less than what was expected, when he first came in at the end of 2010, when they'd been so horrible and led them to a lot of wins down the stretch, including a lot of walk-off wins, it really was bringing back this belief overall. And I think there's also just the side of it of, you know, that there's the management on the field and what that meant, but then also just kind of off the field as a, you know, a likable manager, a good interview during press conferences, always entertaining, someone that they were able to promote, you know, through their, you know, whether it was garden gnomes or, you know, the snow globes, and all this sort of thing. And then even, you know, going on through when they had the unrest in Baltimore in the Freddie Gray situation, and just even his ability to handle that tactfully and to acknowledge that, you know, it wasn't his place to be the person speaking to that. I mean, I think he handled a lot that endeared him off the field. And that's another thing that can get lost when you just look at the overall totals, that the important role that he played in Baltimore and really embraced a city, and a city that had been scorned, you know, not too long before that by a guy like Joe Girardi. So he could go and play in go manage in the Bronx and get a World Series and contribute to the, you know, the much discussed, you know, legendary Baltimore inferiority complex with sports. He kind of challenged that and embraced it. So I think that off the field stuff too is really added to kind of the narrative around him and his importance in the whole story of the Orioles' history.
Yeah, I remember I don't remember which season this was, but it was at some point somebody was asking him, I think it was about the Yankees and about all their history, and so, and he says something to the effect of, you know what, we got some history here too. You know, we got some retired numbers, we got some statues, and we got some Hall of Famers. And I think that's the kind of thing that endeared him to a lot of Orioles fans.
Yeah, it was almost fun to see him kind of get under the skin of, you know, the evil empires as they are with the Yankees, and then some with the Red Sox, and you know, had a certain fighting spirit that when you're competing with those guys for so long that are the big money organizations, it's nice to have someone like that kind of throwing jabs for the fan base.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll leave it at that. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. It's going to be a really interesting offseason for the Orioles as they make these decisions, and hopefully we can talk again before next season.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks for the chance.
People should check out Roar from 34, and they can check you out on Twitter at Roar from 34.
That's right. Thanks so much, Justin. I appreciate it.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.